She's changing her name
from Kitty to Karen. She's trading her Chrysler for a
blue Jeep.
No, she's moved on. She doesn't want the Chrysler anymore either.
Oh shit.
Now she wants a Hyundai i20. Easy to park.
We are Hottest 100s and Thousands, and we have taken control of your radio station. This is the podcast in which we talk about the songs that have been deemed hot enough to be in the Triple J Hottest 100. My name is David James Young, and I'm one of the four voices you're going to be hearing for the next hour. So joining me once again is Nathan Harrison.
Hello.
And Adam Buncher.
Hello.
Adam looked very confused because he didn't know what that was.
No,
from.
I didn't at all. I have a guess now formulated in my head, and I am guessing that the answer will come to me later, and I'm being patient.
Okay.
I hope you're wrong.
Know?
No, yeah, of course I know. I hope you're wrong.
Of course you know. It was a single word and a
everyone knows except you.
Does our special guest know?
I certainly know.
Alrighty.
Finally.
Who's that? Who is this guy? Who let him in? Who is this?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. For almost as long as we've been doing this podcast, like any good podcast, we've had a mascot. We've had a mascot out on the field, cheering it and, you know, getting the crowd riled up. In between seasons, especially, just like...
oh, boy.
Yeah, he's been dancing out there for a long-ass time. I don't know how you've survived in that costume this whole time. When he's not doing that, he occasionally plays guitar and puts out music and, you know, does all that sort of stuff. But his main gig is as mascot of Hottest 100s and Thousands.
Yeah.
His name... is Jack Richard Riley.
G'day, everybody.
Yeah. I was today years old when I found out that the R stood for Richard.
How did you not know?
Brother, you're one of like my closest friends. And I just never bothered to ask. Can we get into the songs? I feel like I need to redeem myself. Feeling agitated. I need a long skirt and a... No, damn it!
Wow.
He's Same. Fucked it. 90 songs down. 10 to go. Like ever. We've ascended to the top 10 of the Triple J Hottest 100 of 2001.
The last Hottest 100.
Are you ready, Nathan?
I think I am ready.
Are you ready, Jack?
Yeah. Yep.
Adam?
I think I've proven definitively so far that I am not.
That's why I saved you for last, to give you extra time.
Thank you. I don't think it was enough, but let's... persevere anyway.
At number 10, it's the return of Cake with Short Skirt Long Jacket.
I want a girl with a mind like a diamond. I want a girl who knows what's best. I want a girl with shoes that cut and eyes that burn like cigarettes. I want a girl with the right allocations, who is and thorough and sharp as a tack. She's playing with her jewelry, she's putting up her hair, she's touring the facility and picking up slack. I want a girl with a short skirt and a long jacket.
Put your vibra slaps out, motherfuckers. That was Cake coming in at number 10 in the 2001 Triple J Hottest 100 with their signature song, Short Skirt Long Jacket, from the album Comfort Eagle.
Comfort Eagle.
Mm.
Do you have a fact about eagles before we get into
yes.
it?
Oh, yes. Ooh, eagles. I should do, shouldn't I?
In what way are they, or are they not comforting?
Well, I think eagles, like, they're very good at rearing their young, so that's comforting.
Now... we've discussed Cake at length in the past, some of their other tracks, including Never There.
Yep.
And The Distance.
Oh, yeah.
And their cover of I Will Survive.
Oh, yeah, that too.
But now we are getting to the song. Highest charting here, highest charting on like on the actual like real world charts, most streams on Spotify, etc. Cool. Like, yeah, this is the cake song. With that in mind, Nathan, do you feel it has earned its place as the cake song?
Yeah, like, I mean, like undeniably. Yeah. Like this is, you know, like I'm sure there are some people who aren't into this for fairly valid reasons or whatever. It's like it is a somewhat weird alt rock song with very spoken lyrics.
Yeah, we've brought up this term before, but it's a German term called Sprechgesang, which is speak singing.
This song is just a joy the whole way through. Like, definitely. This is another one that I remember seeing the video of first, I think. They go around into like showing people the music, like playing it for them and then just interviewing them. And it's a lot of people being like, oh, yeah, sounds pretty good.
Pretty cool.
Cool. And, you know, like, cut to like an old guy and he's like, oh, yeah, this rocks. And
that's
like,
great.
That's the vibe of the video for the whole thing. Love but that. It's great. Like, I mean, this is like classic cake in terms of like, it's such a groovy song. The arrangement and how kind of, they're so sparse with what they put where. Like, nothing is kind of crowded or over the top of each other. Like, the bass line, the little bits of guitar, all the percussion is just great. When the horns come in, it's beautiful. And then
immaculate.
It just sets up this thing for this wonderfully playful kind of weird poem about a very weird description of a woman that gets, like, increasingly kind of... The picture becomes more and more like business-like in a way that's very strange. Like touring the facility, good dividends, all this stuff. Yeah. Like it really kind of subverts like
Kitty to Karen.
That's
a corporate move.
Well, that's it. Like, you know, I think Rock's idea of the feminine over the last 50 years has been Karen to Kitty, and this is flipping that.
That's great. I also love how you're talking about the build and all that. It almost feels like the narrator is gaining more confidence. He becomes more emphatic, actually, like as the music kind of swells.
And the gang vocals are encouraging him. Get up early. Stay up late.
That would be a great girl.
Yeah.
You should want that girl, John McCree. Yeah.
Well, I just think it's funny because like that's how Cake started. They were a reaction against American rock music generally and specifically grunge.
Right.
Because they thought it was funny that there was artists like Kurt Cobain or Billy Corgan or Eddie Vedder that were selling this vulnerability, but extremely loudly.
Mm.
So they just thought the best way to subvert that would to be, you know, equally as vulnerable, but vulnerable in like a quirky, quiet sort of theater kid way.
Huh.
Which is funny because... this song in particular really reminds me of it. A lot of the Cake ethos and a lot of the stuff that Cake sort of dabble in outside of doing music is they talk about deforestation. They do lots of like sort of leftist leaning cool shit.
Yeah, right.
That made sense to me because when I listened to this, like revisiting it for this podcast, I couldn't shake the feeling of Fugazi. This to me sounds like if Waiting Room was in the hands of like a nerd who loved James Brown to the point where they even have the break in it. And the guitar tone is so that Ian MacKay like crunchy crispy guitar tone, and the actual riffs are very very similar to like a straightened out less edgy Fugazi.
Yeah. And instead of bringing him the cape, the James Brown cape, they just bring an eagle. Perches nicely. Yeah.
It's a little hug with its wings.
Eagles don't sound
that's
like
that. That's so good. Yeah. I think you're so spot on about that. Like, especially the ethics of both of those bands have been such a big part of how they've defined themselves.
Exactly.
And to the point that that has been a driving force of how they've kind of distributed their music, how they've toured. Like, Cake didn't play for a very long time because John McCrae was like, I'm going to be a farmer instead. Like, that's a better thing to do.
Yeah.
You're like, cool, man. I wish other bands decided to be farmers instead. But that's okay. Like, it's, you know, there's a lot of bands that's a very easy thing to be like, it would be better if you were a farmer instead of this band. But it's okay. And obviously the same with Fugazi. The way that they toured, the way that they kind of built a community was such a driving part of the band, such an important part of the music.
I'm going to quote Mr. John McCree.
Go for it.
When he said, this song was about prosperity and depression.
And the big two.
And the strange behavior of the human mating ritual. What an absolutely phenomenal thing to say about this song. So, so good. I mean, like, obviously I heard this when I was a good deal younger, but it's only now that I connected it to what the narrator's character really is, which is like, here is a guy who feels completely entitled to spend several minutes talking about all the things that would be ideal to have in a partner. Like this incredible specificity of listing as if you know, that was available to you, as if you could be that specific about what you want in a partner.
It's also like she's some weird kind of factory manager or inspector or something. Like, the specificity is very...
It truly.
Strange and subversive that it goes in that direction.
Yeah, totally.
And hinged around this like this idea of short skirt and long jacket, which is utterly meaningless.
It sounds so good, though.
It's a vibe, man. The whole thing is a vibe.
It's a vibe.
The bass, the trumpet, the little fills.
The percussion is so over the top. In the first, like, what, minute, you've got a vibra-slap and a cowbell?
Yeah. The same guy who does that is the same guy who plays the trumpet. So, like, that is an MVP right there.
He's busy. Busy,
busy man.
Busy, so man. Busy. Yeah.
Plus, he probably brings out the eagle, too.
He's got the weird arm thing.
Yeah. For the eagle he's playing it all one-handed because he's, you know, the falconer's kind of glove, and the eagle with its blindfold on is just kind of just sitting there.
Doing a little head bop, maybe.
Oh, nice.
I think the eagle would be into it. Obviously, for everyone, like, just singing along to this song is fun.
Yeah.
Nailing the three different short skirt long jackets. It's just classic. So fun. Really, and like the pause, you know, like the drums coming back in. So there's just so many joyful moments the whole way through.
To me, I feel like there's a real kinship between Cake and bands like the Eels and Beck, and into a sort of way like King Missile.
Bands that would like pretty proudly be described as honkies.
Honkies. But it's but I just, what I enjoy about them is, like, one, because I'm a fucking poetry word nerd. Yeah, I love all that.
And a pro honky.
And a pro honky.
Yeah.
I love the idea of them reaching into beatnik, sort of just skirting the avant-garde and bringing that into like a mainstream context.
Well, yeah, this is the first time a top 10 song has had like this degree of poetry since literal poet Allen Ginsberg.
And this is what I say, and I feel like all those artists are really indebted to Allen Ginsberg and Bukowski and all of those people that sort of did that same thing.
Yeah, 100%.
Open question.
Yeah.
Nathan, you pose an interesting thing about bands that you wish went into farming. Where's like the perfect break point of band that you wish went into farming and band that you think would be good at farming?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Part of it, I think, is like the band with the most members
would be great
that
at
I
farming.
Think has culturally done the most damage, you know, because then we're removing a terrible band and creating
a lot of farmers,
like six or seven farmers, maybe, you know.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the Polyphonic Spree?
I think they're all right. Look, I mean, that feels like they already are farmers. Yeah. Like, if there was, like, you know, a Pitchfork article about the Polyphonic Spree's weird little farm commune, I'd be like,
Oh yeah.
I'm like, not reading that. I already know. Yeah. You know. But I don't know who would be good, though. Like, what qualities in a band?
What about Nickelback? Yeah? I reckon Nickelback are, like, they're, like, big, muscly dudes.
Yeah.
So, like, they'd be good at hard labor. Plus, they live in, like, they're from, like, rural Canada, which has plenty of farming in and unto itself.
Yeah.
So, they probably would have grown up choring, eh? So, yeah, so, I reckon. Did you not know Nickelback are Canadian?
Oh, and yeah, I did. I just didn't know that you were doing a Canadian accent.
Oh, sorry.
Go Canucks.
Go Canucks. Hey, Adam.
Yes.
Yep. Ha ha. Is that in this song?
It's not in the Cake song. No. John McCree does not go, "I want a girl with a short skirt and a long jacket."
Yep.
He could, though.
Yeah. Did anyone else in the room see Cake at the Harvest Festival?
Yes, I did.
They were great.
They were very good.
I was not there that year.
I learnt a couple of interesting things about farming that day.
Oh, yeah?
Turns out...
It was the Harvest Festival,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. Well, it turns out sheep go to heaven.
Mm-hmm. And goats? What do they do?
They go to hell.
They're okay. Oh.
Oh, the poor goats.
Let's all cry about goats. It's really angry that people are...
Have you seen a baby goat?
No.
They're beautiful.
I'm pro goat.
Goats are the goat.
They're goated. Yeah,
goated with the sauce.
They're the original goat.
McCree, I thought you loved me.
Favorite cakes, once round.
Oh. any kind of rainbow cake. Like, yeah, just the sugarier and butterier, the better.
I'm going to say tiramisu.
Whoa.
Oh, does that count?
Oh, there are layers to that answer.
Terrible masu.
Yeah, that's what I would say if I liked bad cakes. My real favorite cake is a flan. No, I don't know. I don't know what my favorite cake is. I haven't thought about it. I think maybe a banoffee pie.
Jack, you've picked like three things and I don't think any of them are cakes, my dude.
Is tiramisu not a cake? How is that not a cake?
It's a pudding.
It's a pudding?
Whoa.
Mm.
Leave us a 5-star and say either pudding or cake.
Look, it's not an exotic choice, but I love a good carrot cake.
Yeah.
Carrot cake is
good. Good carrot cake with some good icing and, you know, yum yum.
I was thinking, just also one last cake thing. I would love to hear a version of this in a minor key done by Tom Waits. I think it'd be very funny. She's changing her name from Kitty to Karen.
There's just someone banging on pots in the background. That's all it is. Someone just smashing pots.
I want a girl who gets a buddy. I want a girl who stays a lady.
Could you do it more like Knight and Hennepin? Like talkie.
What?
More talkie.
You know, his joke.
Yeah, that's the one.
You know, there ain't no cake that's a god when he's drunk.
What?
I loved in a Tom Waits interview once where the guy was like, what made you decide to be a singer with that voice? He goes,
it was either a choice between entertainment or air conditioning and refrigeration.
He's so good.
He's so good.
He's goated.
He's goated with the sauce, much like goats.
Put your vibra slaps away.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Geez. I'm sorry.
Oh.
We need to make room for the Omnicord, okay? Yeah. Everybody get your Rock One presets on. At number 9, we're about to make your day. This is Gorillaz with Clint Eastwood.
I ain't happy. I'm feeling glad I got sunshine. In a bag, I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming on. I ain't happy, I'm feeling glad I got sunshine. In a bag, I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming on, it's coming on, it's coming on, it's coming on, it's coming on.
Finally, someone let me out of my cage. Now, time for me is nothing because I'm counting no A's.
Gorillaz coming in at number 9 in the 2001 Hottest 100. That is the lead single from the album. It's called Clint Eastwood.
So Gorillaz, the brainchild of Jamie Hewitt, who obviously was the great artist for the comic book series Tank Girl, and Damon Albarn, who obviously was from the band Wings. Sorry, in my head that was such a good bit. Thanks, Nathan, for validating
it. It's pretty good.
Why didn't you all laugh then?
I was doing the silent laugh.
Sometimes you say, oh, that's funny, instead of laugh.
If you feel it is funny but you don't want to go all out, could you at least lean into the mic and go...
Like Muttley?
Yeah, Muttley.
I prefer like the Ernie from Sesame Street laughter.
That's a good one.
I had a bit when I was in primary school where I was like, is a person who started laughing like, but then they just couldn't stop doing that was the whole laugh. So they go like, everyone laughed. It was like 30 seconds of that noise.
Can you imagine if everyone laughed like that? And just like you're in a comedy show.
There was a kid in my grade. Could not contain his laugh, and he tried so hard to because he had the most embarrassing laugh. It was like a Marge Simpson level laugh, like a like a real like dying dolphin laugh. Like
it was, that's rough.
Oh, it's so rough, especially when you're a bloke. Like you're supposed to laugh at the ha 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 like as a bloke, but he's just there going.
So this is a very important piece of art for me. In my opinion, it's a masterpiece, and it's inextricably linked to my sense of identity, my family, and my history. My dad had a career in advertising and graphic design, and has always been a very early adopter to tech. So we were very early to the Laserdisc. We had a projector just because it was new tech. And also my brother and sister were quite a bit older than me. So I guess I've always had an affinity for things that were vaguely childlike in nature, but aimed at older children, eventually gave way to my love of anime. So my sister's boyfriend at the time was involved in a semi-involved with a bootleg VHS tape trade.
Ooh. So, wasn't all the way involved, Your Honor.
Was allegedly involved, semi-involved. So at a very early age, we had VHS rips of Akira, Ghost in the Shell. And then when Neon Genesis started airing after South Park on SBS, my brother and I would go to the video shop and find all the anime we could possibly find. And so I was very deep into animation right when this song dropped. Also, because of SBS, huge shout out, they also showed the Up in Smoke 2001 tour.
Oh, yes.
Featuring Dr. Dre, Eminem, Snoop Dogg, and Ice Cube, and wow, various others.
They put that on SBS.
They put that on SBS after, oh, it was one of the Monday night movies after, oh, damn, Evangelion, really? Finished. Yes. That really sparked my fascination with hip hop as a thing. So I come to the Gorillaz with a very, very firm and cemented interest in animation directed towards older people and in hip hop. I was right in the center of the Venn diagram of, I guess, who they were targeting. Mm. And I think the Gorillaz, they kind of exist as a thing that the idea of the music industry actually being the multimedia industry is just how music is consumed now. And artists very much first are an image more so than they are a song. The songs are important, obviously, but the way they are sold is
20 seconds of the song.
20 seconds are sold visually, like in a visual, yeah, way. So the, yeah, interesting as well, another reason why I think I really had an affinity with the Gorillaz was that I was no stranger to fake bands because I was a massive fan of the show The Monkees. And I often wondered whether, yes, The Monkees and the Gorillaz had some sort of, if that was one of the reasons.
There's any kind of affinity there.
Oh. Yeah. And also just thinking about Dan the Ornamator being involved and Damon Albarn, 2D being, whoa, 2D is the name of the character.
Who's the other guy you mentioned who's not Albarn?
Dan the Automator, who was the producer right, of the record.
Right, who definitely deserves a shout-out because the production on the Gorillaz is, you know.
He deserves a double shout-out, particularly for this song, because without Dan the Automator, you don't get Del the Funky Homo Sapien. Jesus Christ, edit that out, please, Adam. Thank you.
Nope.
Dan the Automator was also working on Deltron 3030, yep, which was Del the Funky Homo Sapien and Dan the Automator's collaboration project.
Yeah.
And the reason Del was interested into the first place is that he was a massive comic book nerd and hugely into Tank Girl. Otherwise, he wasn't going to be fucking with it. He didn't even really want to do it. He was like, fuck, I'd love Tank Girl. I'll give it a go. And he read a book that was gifted to him. It was called How to Write a Hit Song. He stole all of the ways to do that.
And it wasn't the one by the KLF, was it?
It was not by the KLF. Right, it was by, right, Molly Ann Leaker. Who,
wow.
And what hits has she written?
Lots and lots and lots and lots.
I'm going to look
so
her up.
So there.
She's very good. And also, she's responsible for Clint Eastwood by the Gorillaz. Good song. Obviously, it's great. I can't obviously remove the nostalgia goggles from it. But can I just say, this week when I started listening to it again for this podcast, I noticed in the second verse, there's a beautiful piano line that I had never heard before. So 20 years on. 20
still giving.
Years, still giving.
So on, I'll pick up directly from what you said about the piano line or whatever, because I think like this was in preparation, was probably the first time I actually sat down with a good pair of headphones and deliberately listened to the song as listening to the song. And there is so much going on in the peripheries.
Mm. Yes.
There's just like little bits and pieces, whether it be piano lines or some weird vocal stuff. And it really does feel like it's just right in the very, very corner of your ear. And it's all kind of got this kind of stumbling momentum as it kind of rocks forward very uneasily. And the song's got this kind of like gloominess to it, really, or this kind of vague sense of threat. So the whole kind of image that I got when I was listening to it is like you're going through this dark forest and there's all these trees obscuring your view. And like every now and again in the corner of your eye, you're catching a glimpse of something. And it's just a bit madcap and cartoonish, like, it's not threatening, but it's like muhaha.
Yeah.
Speaking of sounds as well, maybe we should clear up what we were talking about at the very beginning with
so funny.
The Rock One preset on the Suzuki Omnicord. Can I just say it's so good that this came out in time for us to record this episode.
Yeah, so very, very recently, Damon Albarn, to promote the new Gorillaz album, Cracker Island, talked to longtime BBC and Beats radio host slash personality Zane Lowe. Damon revealed that he basically lifted the entire song from a preset on the Omnicord, which is like a very weird, like, synth string instrument kind of thing where you hold
electronic
down...
Electronic keyboard thing, yeah.
It's like an electronic version of an auto harp.
Mm.
But the thing about it is he didn't take a bit of it and sample it or mix it around.
It's like the core part of the song is that preset.
It's wholesale. And I think...
It's very funny.
Zane Lowe's reaction is all of our reaction. It's the perfect standard.
Yeah, he's just like, loses it's the his whole mind. Song. He was just astonished.
And Albarn's just grooving. He is just loving revealing that information. He's just like, yeah.
It's the Rock One preset.
It just came like that. That's it. That's the preset.
It is a masterpiece, right? Like it's...
Oh, unquestionably.
The chorus is amazing. Del's verses are so good. They're so fun. Mm. They're also like... He does such a good job of fitting them into a pop song in a way that like the first time you hear it as a kid even, like you're like... Oh, I can
sing this.
I can get into this. I can sing this. I can follow along. Like, there's nothing kind of impenetrable or kind of hard to digest. It's all just kind of there, and it's beautiful. And the kind of that really uneasy beat works so well.
What I think is so interesting is that so much of like the Gorillaz, both in this song and in the previous song, to me revolves around the theme of future anxiety.
Mm.
You know, you've got this uneasy song that has this menacing line of the future keeps coming on.
Mm.
And it's like almost the Gorillaz are positioning themselves as like these futuristic prophets. And what I think is interesting looking back on the Gorillaz now is that like they've just stayed and they've gradually also just become more optimistic or more playful. They've kind of just like they've had that anxiety and they've kind of been the harbingers of that doomsaying. But then they just kind of stuck around and... played and I don't know. I don't know what exact point I'm trying to make with that, but I think it's an interesting parallel of you talking about how basically now you see, Jack, so many bands being the Gorillaz.
Yeah.
You know, they there's this like prototypical thing that had this anxiety around it, but now it's just like kind of the norm.
It is. Mm. And also the idea that hip hop is pop music.
Well, there is such an intersection of things going on here. This is Britpop, this is hip hop, this is psych rock, this is like alt pop. There's so much going on within the like the woodwork of this song. So my first year of uni, I do not remember the context in which music was being played out of the loudspeakers. There must have been like a DJ playing on like the duck pond lawn or something. But you know, obviously I'd had nearly 10 years of experience with the song. Like, actually, this song was like one of my first party tricks. Like, I learned all the words. This was the first non-Eminem rap song that I learned all the words to. And like, it came on and, you know, I'm just kind of vibing as I'm walking along. And I see someone sitting nearby with giant black hair who also knows this song really, really well. And we see each other vibing to this song and we give each other what is colloquially known as the nod. Not long after that, that person followed me on Twitter. Then we just kept seeing each other around. And eventually, in 2012, asked them and my friend Adam to do a podcast with me. That one didn't take, but then... but then about 18 months later, I had another idea for a podcast. And I was just like, well, this would be cool if it also included this guy I met just recently called Nathan. That's like the butterfly effect. If Clint Eastwood hadn't been playing and if I hadn't exchanged the nod with Andrew McDonald, we might not be in this room right now. Damon Albarn, you are responsible for forming this podcast, so I hope you're happy.
Leave us a 5-star, Damon.
You son of a bitch.
You son of a bitch.
Look what you've done to me.
The future is coming on.
Alrighty, folks, at number 8, this is The Avalanches with Since I Left You.
Get a drink, have a good time now. Welcome to paradise. Paradise. Paradise.
The Avalanches coming in at number 8 in the 2001 Hottest 100. That, my friends, was the title track to their debut studio album. The first of many studio albums.
Hey, they're doing all right now.
Yeah, now they are. Our friends, the Avalanches. The last time they were in the top 10, we talked about Frontier Psychiatrist, which was obviously an absolute game changer. But if there's going to be one Avalanches song that you truly just love with all your heart, like I feel like Since I Left You is that song. That immediate mood set of the do-do-do's. There's the flourish of the flutes. Every bit of sample work here. I have just always been in awe of how that collective were able to find the exact right moment of the exact right song to put in the exact right place and piece by piece make something like this happen, especially given the technology of the time that they were working with. Like, there are meme accounts that can come up with shit within a couple of hours, right? They can splice a thing, they can download it on their phone off YouTube, and then find the little bit that they want, chuck it in Audacity, kink, 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 brr, 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 chuck it on the internet. That's lunch right there. The Avalanches were coming up at a time where it was just like, oh, wow, this has a hard drive of 64 megabytes. You're like, whoa. At that period, like, it would have just been so painstaking to, like, find the exact thing and then kind of lug it over onto like a big, thick, fuck-off computer that is just like, oh, you want me to do one thing? I'm probably going to fucking have a stroke, but like there are 11 different songs sampled. Every Day by The Main Attractions.
Mm-hmm.
Anima Ikor by Tony Mottola. The Sky's the Limit by The Dupree's. Let's Do the Latin Hustle by Klaus Wunderlich.
Love that one.
Take Off Your Makeup by Lamont Dozier.
Yeah.
By the Time I Get to Phoenix by Tony Mottola.
Woo!
And we're two Montana.
I feel like you actually do know that one, though.
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
By the Time I Get to Phoenix is a famous song.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
By the time I get to Phoenix.
Hang on. Is that...
No, I
thought so.
My name is Tony! Welcome to Paradise by Club Med. Daddy Rich by Rose Royce.
Yas Daddy.
Yas Daddy.
Yes.
Younger Than Springtime by Charles K.L. Davis. El Gato Montes by Michel Legrand and his orchestra.
Gato means cat.
And Theme from Policewoman by The Button Down Brass featuring Ray Funky Trumpet Davies.
Okay, yeah. Know what I'm listening to on the way home.
That list speaks so much to the culture of crate digging. Like the fact that we don't know Nearly all that list. It's just like,
So the earliest song on there is from 1956.
Good year.
And the most recent song that they sampled is from 1986.
Mm.
So that's literally 30 years of music swimming around in the DNA of this record.
Yeah.
Which was their only record for 16 years. So,
wow.
Unbelievable stuff.
Truly.
Nathan, you're obviously a diehard fan. We saw the Avalanches together on the Wildflower Tour. What comes to mind for you when you revisit this song? Like, because obviously this is a record that's been a part of your life for so long.
Yeah. I mean, I have a very strong personal and like social love for this song. Like, I think this song speaks to a lot of moments in my life and connections that I have with lots of people, including you, including kind of everyone. Like,
yeah.
Also, critically of like, and just like thinking about the construction of this song, like is eternally fascinating. We've talked about sampling
a lot. We've talked about Fatboy Slim. We talked about the Chemical Brothers. We talked about DJ Shadow that one time. And even, you know, we talked about Frontier Psychiatrist last season as well. And like we've talked a lot about crate digging and the kind of incredible process that has now been sort of digitized and made very different. But this like was such a radical thing to be finding all these little things and putting them together in this way.
Mm.
Frontier Psychiatrist is a great song, is a phenomenal song. It's also very much a bunch of samples that have clearly been put together to create kind of a song that has a real, like, it's like, it's a comedy song almost in the way that like it plays all this episode. This is a piece of music that has been crafted by finding kind of the finest elements of all of these different songs.
Yeah, yeah.
Putting them together in a way that let them each shine like majestically, but also create an entirely new piece of music that is full of life and soul and light. It's just glorious. Like this song is like being on a dance floor, but it's also being like on a back porch with friends and like, you know, like as the sun's going down, you're having a barbecue. It's like, it's being with people and feeling joy. And it's about like the joy of discovery and the whole new world. And that comes from the process of making, but also just the joy of finding that in the music.
And cutting up the song like that to create that phrase. Since I left you, I found the world so new.
Which is like directly going against what the sample is about. That's the sample is a breakup song, but it's about finding new love or whatever. And anyway, like, but this is just straight up going like, it's a breakup song. And maybe I'm going to put this out there, the most positive breakup song that exists. It's just,
it's
pure
like
liberation.
Letting go, and there's just, there's nothing but the whole world in front, like a new world. Like,
that's it. Yep.
It's just beautiful.
It's utopia in song.
Yeah.
It evokes such elation.
It's completely idyllic, right? It almost to me seems like the kind of thing that's sold to us all the time. it's like an advert from the 1950s.
Yeah.
And there's something about the quality of the song that also makes it feel like it's out of arm's reach at some points. But then like it kind of washes in and you kind of like find yourself there. And I don't know, like myself as a listener, sometimes I kind of need to feel almost that I need to read the bittersweet into it, because it's almost too much to let that in. It's almost too much to let utopia in.
But there's a beautiful read in that of it's like constructed and it's almost not real.
Yeah.
But the minute you start thinking about it as real, it becomes real.
You can make the choice.
You really can.
You make the choice.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think that's what's beautiful about it. And that's what, it's like a song you really can melt into.
Yeah.
I've listened to a very, very long edit of this song. There's like, I think there's an hours version of it on YouTube. I've had it on through a day. And I think I think it's a song that it could be on loop for basically my whole life. And there's a few songs that I feel this way about. I can't imagine getting sick of it. Yeah. I can't imagine going, oh, turn it off. I've had enough of this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't imagine doing that.
Like, I think there's a level at which, like, this album particularly is kind of deified to a point that, you know, I think for people like, oh, yeah, you know, we've heard that enough or whatever. It's like, yeah, that's fine. Like, you know, but when it's on,
that's
like,
it, right? Exactly what I was about to say.
It's just like, it's magic. And
it's overrated until you're listening to it.
And you know what? It also sounds like we've stepped into the already going on thing. And the way it starts and the way it ends, it feels like you could just, it's been looped in already and we're just kind of walking past at the right time.
I mean, it's welcome, right? It's like, we're not creating paradise for you. Paradise is here, but welcome.
Yeah,
and we are taking the time to specifically welcome you.
You just arrived at the party and everyone's turned and smiled to see that you're here.
More than that, we've been waiting for you.
Yeah.
We are so glad you're here.
I wonder if there's a take of this where it's not a breakup song and it's coming back from being away. It's welcome back. Since I left you, I found the world so new. Come and check out what I've been building while we've been apart.
And also it depends what you is, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And it depends on how you are feeling or whatever. And that's what's so beautiful and washy.
There's a lot of stuff to shed. There's a lot of stuff to let go of. And it's like maybe that's kind of it, right? It's not about adding anything more. It's just about removing the unnecessary.
Yes.
You just let go and then, oh, there you are. Welcome to paradise.
It's also like, I mean, so much of this is about crate digging and everything, like, but But technologically, like 2001, we're kind of at the point where the internet is becoming a thing, and all of a sudden there is a world so new in terms of like all music all of a sudden is kind of accessible in a way that it has never been before. Mm. Communities making connections in a way they've never been before.
Definitely.
I think in terms of the process of crafting that, like you are kind of, Avalanche is sort of engaging with this world and reflecting this kind of new era of music and production. And there's a foot in both camps or whatever in terms of, obviously they're still doing a lot with vinyl, but like, it is a new world. And
shame about the internet, though.
Yeah, it hasn't been all great.
That didn't really pan out.
No, look. The music video for this is possibly the best Avalanche's video and so one of beautiful. The best music videos of all time.
Yeah, it's an all time.
Just breathtaking choreography, incredible intrinsic storytelling that feels so connected to the music itself. Incredible, incredible video. Yeah, if you haven't seen it, highly, highly recommend it. I'm staring at the one person who doesn't watch music videos I'm saying that.
It's funny because this is obviously like an ongoing gag that you haven't seen many music videos.
No.
Yeah, but I only realized that as a gag like really late on in the great podcast. It must be a bit I always like plus 15 over or something. But the...
Wow.
Just
wash your thumb.
No, it's good.
With leave soap.
That's a good bit.
And acid.
Yeah.
So you can't do that shit ever again.
No more plus 15.
No.
Only minus 15.
Only minus 15 to hear it again.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we need to break some things down. Adam having not seen music videos, that's obviously not a bit.
Not a bit.
Yeah, that's real.
We're doing it. We're playing Is That a Bit?
Yeah, yeah. Nathan having a son, that is as real as the streets. Yeah.
Oh, a bit ages since we checked in. Yeah. What's
the rave baby doing?
Yep.
Jeff the rave baby.
Jeff's good. He started at TAFE this year. So he's doing pretty good.
He's gonna become
what's Jeff studying at TAFE?
Bricklaying.
Deej was there. We took him on his first day.
Yeah,
very proud.
He started working as a brickie now?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, he's got like an apprenticeship thing going on.
Since I left TAFE.
All right, where were we? Uh-oh, you just got freaking Weezered. At number 7, it is Weezer with Island in the Sun. Hit it.
I feel so Weezered. All right.
You've never gotten Weezered?
Do I need a change?
Not like that.
Can I stay in the same shirt now? Like,
I wouldn't.
When you're on a holiday, you can't find the words to say. All the things that come to you, and I wanna feel it too. On an island in the sun, we'll be playing and having fun, and it makes me feel so.
Coming in at number 7 in the 2001 Hottest 100. That is Island in the Sun. It comes from an album that's green. So naturally they called it Maladroit. No, it is the green album, aka self-titled Weezer, which is one of many self-titled Weezer albums. Mm. They've got a lot. They are color-coded. Now, Adam.
Yeah.
You will never feel bad anymore.
Never.
No. As a radio commercial radio presenter, you have no doubt.
I'm in the lucrative podcasting game now.
Yes, indeed.
Cha-ching.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah. But you have no doubt spent a lot of time with the song, whether you wanted to or not, given it has been a staple of mainstream radio since it arrived back in the year of our Lord, 2001. Two-part question.
Oh.
What was your reaction when you first came across the song, and what is your relationship with it now?
I will answer them both in the same way. Lukewarm.
So not the normal heat that would be kind of associated with being on an island in the sun.
If I was on said island, I think, yes, it would be indoors.
Nothing healthy about a tan.
No, that's right.
Skin Cells and Trauma.
On an island in the early morning or late afternoon sun, but maybe not the late afternoon sun because you never know when the sharks are about, you know.
Is that more of a
afternoon?
Yeah, right.
Afternoon, evening, shark time.
Yeah. It's shark time. Shark time.
What are they doing in the morning?
Busy. Busy.
Yeah. Running errands.
Busy. Yeah.
So, growing teeth.
Yep. Okay.
Yep. Ready for the afternoon.
That's family time for sharks.
Sure.
You know?
Okay.
Like, there is fun to be had with the song, for sure. I think the moment that I like the most is when that guitar kicks in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We'll spend some time together. Like, yeah. when it gets full Weezer, that moment and knowing that that moment is either coming or having witnessed that moment transposes the tone of the song in a different way. Without that, it kind of feels like almost in genre parody territory. There's a really weird, I think, idea of like irony and sincerity at play in this song, and I'm not quite sure where it lands. And I think if I was to, you know, like talk about the themes and story of the song or what it gives me, I think it's, if you look at it from this point of view, it's quite successful in this. It's like they're not on the island in the sun. They're dreaming about the island in the sun. So it's like makes sense for the song to not be completely serious. They're holding that idea playfully. Like, wouldn't it be good if we were able to do that? So just everything about the performance of it seems, I don't know, like...
Suspicious?
I'm not suspicious of it. No. I think it's clean.
All right. Okay.
I loved this song as a kid. I still obviously have a nostalgic connection to it. But listening to it in prep for this, I couldn't help but see the working. And knowing the part of the Weezer lore is that Rivers spent a lot of time analyzing Nirvana songs. He has apparently a book where he's just written the structures out for every single Nirvana song and has written the lyrics in every single thing. And he also studied music at Harvard, so he's been very analytical with music in the past.
Sure.
And to me, this is Smells Like Teen Spirit mixed with something by the Beach Boys. This is very Kokomo, Smells Like Teen Spirit.
I can see that.
Good math.
Especially, yeah, but I...
Smells Like Kokomo.
Smells Like Kokomo. This is Smells Like Kokomo. And although that kind of cheapened the experience a little bit for me, I still gave a little bit of a, oh, well done. Good. You really did mash the Beach Boys with Nirvana really, really well. So, that was my only take for the song.
Yeah.
Liked it as a kid. Loved it. It was on my radio alarm when it was in the morning. Would come on. That would be on a lot. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's very like, oh, this is a good song. Like, this is a very well-crafted pop. I don't like it. But it is good. You know, the opening is iconic, and it's iconic for a reason. I don't know Weezer as well as most people probably, but like... doesn't feel like a song that Weezer would write. Like, if I didn't know and you played it and you're like, oh, this is like a Sugar Ray song, I'd be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It fits in that weird late 90s bunch of
Paragon
bands that are like, don't really, like, are just kind of throwing songs out in the hopes that maybe this one will be a hit.
And I think as well, it kind of speaks to like Pro Tools becoming a thing for bands where the structures of the songs became very mapped out. And I think it's particularly with Weezer and them becoming such an analytical band, I think that's what a lot of the issues with the later Weezer material is, they have such a vast knowledge of musical theory or such knowledge of music that the music that they make feels very, not inauthentic, but almost by the numbers. It doesn't feel like he sat down and was like, I'm really feeling so much about a thing I need to write about it. It felt like he was, I'm going to attempt to work out this song, this Rubik's Cube of this song.
Very prepared.
I totally get where you're coming from. Like, it's simultaneously the most and least Weezer song. These songs that are like anomalies within their canon, and yet the fact that they are as big as they are is kind of reflective of Weezer as a whole, because they've always just been these outsiders that have desperately wanted to take over the world. Weezer could have easily broken up like years ago. Weezer is still going. And they literally, like, their most recent endeavor was a co-headlining stadium tour with Green Day and Fall Out Boy. They won.
Yeah.
They won.
And we lost.
This was not supposed to happen. They were supposed to be a whatever happened to band, and yet they have survived that rebirth of the band to becoming what they are now, which is an anomaly, begins with Island in the Sun. The fact that there is so much going on in terms of being indebted to power pop, being indebted to Buddy Holly, being indebted to, like, literally Buddy Holly, not their own song Buddy Holly, but the artist.
Indebted
to it. Fascinating how many moving parts there are to a song that is on the surface just four chords and the occasional hip hip. Yeah.
Also, this song is a masterclass in harmony, though. I will say that in the song's defense.
Oh,
the harmonies
yeah.
are very good in this.
Two other things that this song makes me think of. Somehow, it makes me think of karaoke.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah, no, this has got karaoke vibes on it. Oh, for sure.
But it's like, even without having heard this performed at karaoke, I'm still picturing someone singing it in a karaoke style, that being earnestly but ineptly. And also, just like some of the that rolling random footage with the words underneath it, and like these two random people who are kind of like, you know, that there's weirdly some narrative, but it's like it's mostly just a guy sitting on a park bench and a girl leaning on a bridge looking upset. Like, that's most karaoke videos. And then for some of them, like, someone gets a gun. Karaoke videos as well. And then there'll be like footage of a tractor. Sorry, this is all coming back to me now. Yeah. I've got a lot
really
to unpack in terms of like karaoke.
Oh, there's some hectic
videos.
And you were there? And
you were there?
I have been to a lot of karaoke, as you know.
Yes.
And I've never seen the gun in any video.
There's guns. I've seen guns, Jack.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I mean, you know the tractor, right? The tractor shows up all the time.
The tractor's there. Oh, well, the tractor's...
I say tractor, it could obviously be a combine harvester, a wheat thresher.
Combination wheat thresher tractor.
It's driven by John McCree, you know.
John McCree.
Yes.
And the other thing I think about this song is that I am surprised that it wasn't custom written to be featured in an Adam Sandler comedy.
I think it was, wasn't it?
Well, no, it was in Mr. Deeds, but it wasn't custom written for that.
Oh, I do. Oh, you got the freaking Weezer.
Yeah.
But you would have hoped for, like, I think it's a better fit for, like, 50 First Dates, but...
Well, this is what I'm saying, right? Yeah. Like, you get what I mean.
Yeah, I do.
He do be spending a lot of time on islands, though. Adam Sandler.
He do be.
This was very almost not on the Green Album.
Oh, he was like, oh, nah, it's probably doesn't fit.
Yeah, or... it just wasn't planned. But then producer Rick Oskasek, or Okasek.
Of the Cars fame, who also produced their first record.
Sure, he has a car.
I guess you're just what I needed.
And he said, put it in. And
they did it.
And they did it. And it became Pitchfork's 495th greatest song of the 2000s.
Yeah, well.
It's pretty good. There's a lot
probably
of
out of 500.
It's hard to fill out those lists sometimes.
Yeah, like, what other songs were released?
Because thinking about, like, listening to this song before today, I was just like, oh, it must have been such a moment, like, just those chords at the start and the hip hip, like, you know, I was like, oh, I bet that was a real, like, holy shit.
Yeah.
We've nailed it.
But then hearing you talk about the way that Rivers writes the song, it's like, oh, maybe it wasn't a real, like, eureka moment, and maybe it was a more like, ah, oh, yes, my calculations were correct.
We need a hip hip here.
Yeah. Finally, hip hip.
It's like the equation on the board, and he scrubs it out and writes hip hip,
yeah,
and he's like, I've done it.
I've done it. Yes, it's taken a while, but I've concluded the correct conclusions. But then, not even that, like, it turns out that he was just like, ah, it's all rubbish.
Yeah. And
back
and
to the drawing board.
Did you guys talk last time, or one of the times you talked about Weezer, did you talk about the spreadsheet that Rivers published?
No.
Yes.
No.
I tried to block most of it out. So
it's,
maybe.
You'd want to block this out. It's fucking bad. So there's a lot of discourse online about how every single Weezer song is about Asian girls. There was a tweet going out to Rivers being like, yo, all your songs are about Asian girls. And he replied, well, actually, I've made a spreadsheet that says where all the girls are from, and they're not all from Asia. This song's about a girl in Denmark. This song's about a girl in Russia. This song's about a girl in China. But this song's about a girl in somewhere else.
That's Japan.
There's a lot of Japan on there, but it's not every
sort by country. Just as I thought.
That sucks.
It's not good.
It's so bad.
That sucks a lot.
It's some real
my "Where are all the girls in my songs from" spreadsheet is raising a lot of questions that are already covered by my "Where are all the girls in my songs from"
question. Yeah. Well, you know, as well, for one of the later albums, Rivers jumped on Tinder and started all of these. He said, "Oh, apparently you could just..."
I thought he sounded like a weird British scientist. No, is that not what he said?
Can you do it for me? How would he say?
Hello. It's me, Rivers Cuomo. Hello.
From London, England.
England.
I'm going to jump on Twitter. I mean, Tinder, innit?
You're going to match with apes and birds?
I'm going to match with apes and birds. Why? Drive me tractor and me gun.
But why? But why are you doing that?
Because the bloke from the fucking car said I had to, innit?
No, why did he go on Tinder, though? I mean, I'm not shaming anyone for being on Tinder.
No,
whatever.
Tinder's got... I met my girlfriend on Tinder, but... I mean, he wanted to formulate relationships to write songs about. It's getting stories from people. Yeah.
Why? Why is he such a dweeb?
Like, can I tell you why you need to do... You do need to do this. Can I tell you why you need to do this if you're Rivers? Because you live in California, but if you buy Tinder Pro, you can set your geographical location to Osaka.
He's unlocked it!
Since I left you, I found a spreadsheet so new.
All right, it's time to separate the men from the boys. It's time to separate the fucking wheat from the chaff. It is time to get to the upper echelon of the Hottest 100 with one of the greats, one of the all-time greats. Folks, you know them, you love them. The band that needs no introduction. It's Alien Ant Farm! Wow! Coming in at number 6 in the 2001 Hottest 100. That is the song Smooth Criminal. It is taken from their album Anthology.
So good.
Great.
Nathan, do you have a fact about ants or aliens?
Or farms?
Whoa.
Take your pick. Choose your fighter.
Choose your destiny.
Or Michael Jackson.
Nope.
No. Nope. 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 No. No thoughts there.
I don't know if... I mean... Like, leaf-cutter ants are cool. But
what
is
that?
I think they live in South America. Mm. They're the guys that, like, they cut these big leaves and, like, into, like, little chunks of leaf that are very, like, much bigger than them.
Right.
And then we'll carry them all back to the ant colony.
Yeah.
But it's just this kind of, you end up with this, like, really long single-file march of ants all carrying, like, triangle fragments of leaves that are bigger than them, and it looks very cool, and they go and they do stuff with it.
Do we know what they do with the bits?
I think they eat it, and it's for, like, sharing food or whatever.
Yeah,
but,
cool.
You know, they're cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Yeah, it's perfect, man. Great, thank you. Absolutely. Exactly what I wanted.
If you already know, don't guess, but do you want to guess how many weeks this was number one in Australia?
Okay.
It's more than zero.
Okay, more than zero, obviously. Yeah.
May I start the bidding?
So, Price is Right rules? Highest without going over?
Sure. Yep.
Okay.
4.
I'm going to say 7.
I'm going to say 15.
It was 8. So
Yeah!
That's two
Come
months.
Come on, baby.
2 months of Australia being dominated by this guy.
Yeah.
Being ruled by ants.
Yes.
I, for one, welcome.
What is this? A center for ants? It turns out it was.
It was a center for ants, and I, for one, yeah.
Welcome our Insider Awards. Yeah.
Shout out to my one friend who likes Alien Ant Farm as a band outside of this cover.
I like
that. I'm right here.
Sorry, I have several friends.
Yeah. Movies. Movies is one of the best songs ever.
Movies rips.
Movies
it's
is such,
such
a good
song. Such a fucking banger. I had this record. I loved this album as a kid.
I think this is a good cover. Like, this is a very solid kind of rock cover of Smooth Criminal. Apparently, they used to always just play the riff a bunch live, and everyone would be like, play the whole song. And they were like, well, the people want it.
Yeah.
So they did.
And then they were like, well, I guess we better release it as a single. And that's the only reason that anyone has heard of Alien Ant Farm.
They were also quite famous for playing covers during their live sets in the early days, is my understanding as well. Like, do they kind of like really cut their teeth or mandibles doing that?
It must be a weird thing. Like, obviously, you know, success, particularly success in music, but success in anything is a crapshoot, and it's, you know, the industry is a piece of shit, like, thing fueled by money. And so none of it matters or has any meaning or importance or whatever. And obviously I'm not successful, so far be it from me to criticize a band. I would never dream. But it must be a weird feeling to be like, nearly our whole success, and certainly any kind of the big success that we had, is because of a cover that we did. That, like, it's not a joke cover, but it's like...
It's not entirely serious, though.
Like, No.
But I actually see that...
It's a fun cover.
Yeah, I see that as a plus point, because it's like, I don't see how you do an entirely serious cover of this song. Like, I just... I think you probably shouldn't. Which brings me on to, honestly, something I want to put to the floor. If your assignment was to do a hard rock cover of Michael Jackson's Smooth Criminal in the year 2001, from like F to A, what like mark do you give this song?
Purely on that assignment? Yeah.
Pretty
A+.
Good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on what the aim is, because sometimes...
I thought you were asking me to do it, and I was like, oh, I'm going to be beat to the chase by like a week by this Alien Ant Farm. It's like, Nathan, the cover's looking good, but terrible news. Check out what's number one on the chart.
Oh, no.
Oh, could anything else go wrong this year?
But I think what I really enjoy about covers is something that subverts it a little bit, but keeps the spirit of the song. And I'm not entirely sold that this kept the spirit of the song. I feel like this is an interpretation that is like, wouldn't it be better if this was turned up?
Sure.
Oh, little bit like none of this
rock.
None of this pop for sissies. It's time for some guitar.
I kind of get what you're saying. Like, it's like they've taken the song and they've put it outside of what they're doing, and they're pointing at it.
This a little
as
bit.
As a cultural artifact, as opposed to embodying it. Like, it's kind of like not sending it up, but also only a few steps away from that.
Yeah. Okay.
I think the key point of difference between, like, side by siding them is in the Annie, Are You OKs. So in the original, that's kind of low key as the pre-chorus. So like the Annie, Are You Okay? Annie, Are You Okay? Are you okay, Annie? And then in this, it basically becomes the first part of the chorus with, like, the change up in the drums and the Annie, Are You Okay? You okay? You okay, Annie? Like, you know, just really just sending it up.
And also,
know?
I think speaking of the drums, I think where what I'm talking about is most evident is in the drums, is because if you've seen that YouTube video of the guy who played drums on the original track, he's obviously an incredible...
Sugarfoot. He's a fucking weapon.
He's an incredible drummer.
His name is Sugarfoot.
That's his nickname.
That's so hard.
But what is so mesmerizing about his pass on the drums, his drum take, is that it stays the same the whole way through the song.
Yeah, it's so solid.
So solid, which is incredibly hard to do, especially when you've got the chops and you're able to do anything. To constrain it to that is just it's a difficult task, and you have to execute the simplicity perfectly, and that's what it actually is. Whereas in Alien Ant Farm's version, I can't help but hear the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Lots of fills, lots of like, they could have put fills in this song.
But I also think that that's necessary in the transposition of it into the rock setting. Like, in the same way that it's also about speeding it up, and it's also about making it more frantic and a little bit more out of control. And hearing that this was something that originally began Life Live makes a lot of sense to me as well. I just think, like, if you are Alien Ant Farm and you can only and you can only be Alien Ant Farm, and you choose to do this song, well, like, this is kind of like almost a platonic ideal of how that project turns out.
Yeah, and it just begs the question,
is that worth it?
Should we have done this?
Science go too far?
Did science go too far? Yeah, but it's, I mean, it is, that riff just goes so hard, whether it's the Michael Jackson version or this version. It just is an incredible sounding collection of notes, and it's played at a beautiful pace, and it really sets a fantastic pacing and energy.
Yeah, it's just a good song. It's comprised of good music.
Yeah.
And they played that good music. So
and this song's particularly important to me because my sister's name is Annie.
Whoa.
Yeah. So she went through her early life hearing lots of Annie, are you okay? Da, da, da. Then she had a bit of a break. And then,
and then this
around
happened.
2001, she gets a lot of Annie, are you okay? Are you
Do
okay?
Do you know who the Annie in the original Michael Jackson song was?
I don't know.
It was Resussy Annie. And that is the
CPR doll.
It's a CPR doll that when you're performing CPR, it's like a Annie, are you okay? It's like a thing in the training at that time or something. I don't know. It's a doll.
Oh, so when you're doing the your CPR, first act, when you're practicing CPR.
You ask Annie if Annie's okay. Annie's not. You need to do CPR.
How's everyone going with CPR? I've got to refresh mine this year.
You're all in trouble if you all collapse and I'm the only person to try and revive you. I'll say that.
CPR? I can't even spell it.
I don't even know her.
I hardly know her.
This is very high, but it also reflects the fervor that Australia felt for this song at the time.
Truly.
They were a big day out act at this time as well. They were out for the big day out.
Yeah, I'm not going to front. At the time, in 2001, I knew this song. I loved this song.
Oh, yeah.
Get out of my way. Yeah. You know, that's all. I can sit here as myself now and say what I like, but you talked to me back in 2001 and you wouldn't have gotten an answer. I was too busy listening to this song in my room.
Oh, yeah.
They went on tour with Papa Roach.
Hell yeah, brother.
Now, not only is that fantastic, because they are, of course, both insects. So that checks out really wonderfully. Good. But it also means that people attending that concert heard not only this song, but Last Resort in the same night.
Cut my life into pieces.
Outstanding.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. What a good night.
Do you guys know how they got the name?
Yes.
So Terry Corso, who is the guitarist, founding member of the band, he's no longer in the band, but he was one of their founding members. He recalled daydreaming at his desk job and thinking about the world, how humans, like especially little kids, have like a ant colony thing, you know? And he's just like, what if we were that for the aliens?
Ugh, yeah. So fucking bad. Oh, that's so funny.
You mean, what if the truth was the truth?
Yeah, what if the truth was out there?
There was no way it was going to be a justified and normal thing for like, where'd you get the name Alien Ant Farm?
Yeah, best case scenario is we thought it would be cool.
Sounded cool.
Sounded kind of cool.
Alien, you come up with a better band name.
You can't. Throw it back all band them. Names are bad.
They are all pretty bad. Except for Cake.
Cake is
a great band.
And great album names as well.
Yeah.
Comfort Eagle.
Actually, I just want to grab good band name, bad name from what the arcs we've talked about today.
Oh, sure. Oh, let's do that.
Okay.
I love it.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Cake.
Great band name.
Yeah,
great
band name. Good.
Great band name.
I agree.
Actually, some of these are all right.
Gorillas.
Good band name.
I think
any band name that's just a name of an animal is bad.
I disagree.
No, with a Z, though. Gorillas.
Yeah, if it was the Gorillas, it wouldn't be good, but Gorillas with a Z is a good band name.
And I think in light of what Jack said about it being a monkey's reference, great band name, if true. Mm. Choose to believe that
huge
it is.
Huge if true.
The truth is out there.
Yes. Mm. The Avalanches.
It's okay.
Bad band name.
Yeah.
Okay. Show you working.
It's not very good.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Yeah.
Oh, such rip.
This segment is popping off.
Oh, wow. The discourse.
Let's keep it going.
What
do you want from me? I don't like the band name.
The answers are either good or bad. Yeah, I don't know what you want me to do with
it's
this.
It's binary, bro.
To show your work in.
I don't think it's very good.
Yeah, but why do you think that?
I think for band names, I don't know how to like say why I like a band name or not. It's always just like, that hits or that sucks.
Avalanches.
And it's usually irrelevant to the, like, you know, Radiohead is a terrible band name. You think it's good.
I think it's a good band
name. I
think it's a terrible band name.
I think Radio Birdman's a better band name.
Oh, it's a great band name.
Radio Birdman is a great band name.
But, you know,
it's a good band name.
I'm not gonna sit here and say why.
No,
I'm going to explain myself.
Yeah, no, I think Avalanches is erring on bad band name because Radio Birdman's such a good band name. Anything that doesn't really...
Anything that's not Radio Birdman
it's kind of
good.
Just a cheap imitation.
Yeah.
Weezer.
Good band name. Good, like great.
Good band name.
I wouldn't say bad, but it's hard for me to separate.
No, good band name. I say good band
name. The name from the artist.
Alien Ant Farm.
Bad band name.
Bad.
It's pretty bad.
I think it's good until I heard how they got there.
Yeah.
I was like, does it, an alien owns some like earth ants? It's in one alien and his ant farm.
Uh-huh.
Aliens ant farm.
Aliens ant farm.
Yeah.
And the other is like a bunch of alien ants.
Yeah. Alien.
On a farm.
You're farming them.
Oh, you're farming
them. Well, no, they're the farmers. They're like...
Yeah, the farm belonging to the alien
Some
ants.
Some alien ants.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And one final question before we all die in this room is how good at farming do you think alien ant farm would be?
The aliens ant farm.
Oh, that's a great question.
No, that's important.
I reckon they'd be dog shit.
Yeah.
Because if Terry Corso was slacking off at his office job, imagine him trying to do manual labor.
Yeah, he can't sew turnips.
They're from California, aren't they? I think they're from California.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
Yeah, I don't reckon they're going to be particularly good at it.
Okay.
I think like that'll be your, I think they need someone to tell them what to do. They can't run the farm. They could work
right
on a farm.
Oh, you think they'd be good workers, but they just need some direction from, say, a John McCree type.
They need someone.
Yeah, they need John. We all need John McCree.
We all need
be
John
like,
McCree to tell us how to
hey,
farm.
Man, just go do it like this. And you'd be like, thanks.
I think they
space
need,
them out more.
I think they need someone like very ubiquitous farmer who's done one thing with farming sort of really, really well and has later sort of disgraced themselves in the public sphere. And then 30 years after they can copy the style, but go more fills should go in, more soil should go in here.
More soil.
We need more corn.
Fucking
no, but it's funny because they do that in the song. He goes,
yeah. He does a bit of that. Yeah.
So they are farmers. They're farming corn. Thanks for having me on the podcast. See you next week on Hottest 100s and Thousands.
That mercifully brings us to the end of yet another episode of Hottest 100.
Same time again next week, boys.
Yes, indeed. We'll see you there. We love you. We appreciate you. Thank you for listening. But before we get out of here, we're picking our favorites. We're picking our least favorites. And we're continuing the ever-continuing story of Carryover Champ and Carryover Chump. Hey, Jack.
Yeah?
You know what? Just because you've been a good guy at sports, and you're never going to get to do this again.
Yeah.
Why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, favorite from this, I'm going to have to go Clint Eastwood Gorillaz. Least favorite, I guess, Smooth Criminal, Alien Ant Farm, or Island in the Sun. You can choose, listener.
Actually, you have to choose.
Yeah,
it's the point of this segment.
I'm going to go, I think Island in the Sun because of the spreadsheet is the bad one.
Okay.
That's a good reason.
God.
My favorite was Clint Eastwood. I'm going to make it my champ because I may as well.
Yeah.
And
wait, was the beginning from that?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
I thought you clocked out like hours ago.
No, I'd just been biding my time.
There you go. Yes, you got it. Well done.
Thank you so much. Yes. We call that a bookend.
Hip, hip. Least favorite, I'm going to go probably Smooth Criminal, but it does not beat my chump, which is still The Shame of Life.
My least favorite is Island in the Sun. It will not become my new chump. That will stay Little Things by Good Charlotte. My favorite and new champ will be Since I Left You by The Avalanches.
Hell yeah, dude. Great shit.
Very good. My favorite is also Since I Left You. It does not replace my champ of At the Drive-In. Great band name.
Very good band name. Do you know where they got that name from?
They were at the drive-in one time.
Yes. No, it is a lyric in the song Talk Dirty to Me by the hair metal band Poison.
Oh, I like it less now. Bad band name. That song sucks. I hate that song. Poison. Terrible band name.
At the drive-in. Yeah. That's
terrible. Terrible stuff.
Talk Dirty to Me.
Least favorite?
Oh, probably Island in the Sun.
Cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Lesson here, don't make a spreadsheet about the nationality of all the girls in your songs.
Don't make
it's really easy to not do that.
Could I say, don't, like, I don't know, be very careful about making a spreadsheet about nationalities in general?
Yeah.
You know?
Jack, thank you so much for being part of this and for being our mascot for so many years, our intern, our gopher. you've been a massive help, mate, and we bloody appreciate you. So thanks for being on the great pod.
Thank you so much for doing the podcast. It's very seldom in one's life do they get the opportunity to enjoy things and then also to be a part of the thing that they enjoy. It beggars belief, and it's not lost on me that This space that I'm filling up is obviously a space in all of our hearts. And
yeah.
In many ways, I wish I wasn't here. but in lots of other ways, I'm very, very glad that I'm here and very grateful for the love and kindness that you all show me most of the time. And this is not a joke. This is far and away my favorite podcast. Thank you so much for the work that you do. Thank you.
You're love very you, welcome, mate. Thank you so
love
much.
Love you guys too.
Love you. Love you big time. On behalf of Mr. Adam Buncher.
McCree.
McCree. Mr. Nathan Harrison.
McCree.
Yeah. That's the Comfort Eagle.
That's how you Comfort Eagle.
That's the Comfort Eagle.
Now we're doing the Comfort Eagle.
Do you remember we talked about cake?
Oh, many moons ago.
Last week?
Yeah, it was sometime last week.
I need a Comfort Eagle. I need the Comfort Eagle.
I need it to call me dude.
I'd settle for some cake.
Hey.
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 Awesome tiramisu.
Mm.
Yeah, I love tiramisu. No shame.
On behalf of Mr. Jack Richard Riley.
McCree.
There we go. Beautiful. And on behalf of Andrew McDonald. My name is David James Young. Everything is good for you and McCree.